At the heart of the galactic insurrection against the Imperium for 10 millennia, the Black Legion are preeminent, not only in the secret annals of villainy harbored by the Inquisition, but also amongst the fractious warbands of other legions. They are Abaddon's own brotherhood of black-hearted killers, the largest and most dangerous force ever to issue from the Eye of Terror. Vastly outnumbering the numerous infernal armies and hordes that dwell in the Eye of Terror, even those of other traitor legions, the Black Legion have the numbers not only to undertake huge system-wide invasions, but also countless simultaneous assaults across the galaxy. They are a ruthless and relentless threat to the Imperium. Warbands of the Legion's veterans have been at the forefront of every Black Crusade over the millennia, striking like a thrust spear into the flesh of the Imperium again and again. Each of their elite warriors, every one of their infamous warbands, has pledged unwavering allegiance to Abaddon the Despoiler. Long ago, the Legion named him Warmaster. It is to him they owe the reignition of their pride, the rebuilding of their strength, and the cutting away of the painful memory of his title's previous holder. The Black Legion trace their history of bloodshed and treachery back to the Primarch Horus. Though there are many fighting with the Legion today that do not share Horus's genetic lineage, all are equally damned in the Imperium's eyes as scions of the heresy's instigator and arch-traitor. This alone would condemn them thrice over, but the Legion's original warriors fell to chaos and treachery just as surely as their Primarch. Allegedly, the first of the Primarchs to be rediscovered during the Emperor's Great Crusade, Horus took command of his Legion when it is rumored they were known as the Luna Wolves. Renamed in his honor as the Sons of Horus in the triumphal aftermath of the fabled Ulanor Crusade, the Legion's pride in their beloved Primarch, as well as a sense of superiority over the other legions, was perhaps their undoing. After Ulanor, the Emperor named Horus the Imperium's Warmaster. In him was vested authority over mankind's vast armies and strategic command to continue the Great Crusade. It can be imagined that amongst Horus's brothers, each a semi-divine paragon of martial leadership, his accession to a position above them intensified any existing filial animosity. The Sons of Horus perceived an enmity toward them or their Primarch as a slight against the greatest warrior and general the galaxy had ever known besides the Emperor. They came to equate his preeminence amongst his brother Primarchs with their own surpassing place amongst the legions, glorifying in their exalted position as the chosen sons of the Emperor's most favored scion, and condemning suggestions of censure as the products of jealousy. The Legion followed Horus full tilt into damnation, gladly fighting for their charismatic gene sire. Yet Horus's pivotal importance to his sons meant that, when he fell, the Legion's part in the heresy was over. Its warriors fought a costly but successful raid to recover Horus's body from the Loyalists, before their first captain, Abaddon, led them in a bloody retreat from Terra. There are those in other traitor legions that still blame the sons of Horus for initiating the rout from Terra, with most of the surviving heretics escaping into the warp in their wake, and many eventually reaching the Eye of Terror. Though large numbers of heretic Astartes who fought as sons of Horus survive in the Era Indomitus, even their knowledge and memories of such times is far from perfect. Their augmented recall was not made to endure for 10 millennia. Recollections have become tainted by the ceaseless lies and deceits they have been exposed to, many of them sown by the Legion itself. Their once faultless memory has become shadowy, twisted by the bitterness and loathing they have indulged in, so that few can say for certain what transpired during the traumatic years of the heresy, let alone the desperate aftermath. That the Legion was forced to fight against its former heretical allies for a place within the Eye of Terror seems likely. Where Horus had once been idolized, many of his sons now mourned or even worshipped him as a fallen god. But this conceit did not last. Over centuries, the sons of Horus were bled white by their enemies. Their hard-won territories within the Eye of Terror lost to other traitor legions. Fractured, their belief in their superiority eroded, the Legion turned to their first captain, naming Abaddon their war master. Abaddon rejected the name Horus, casting it from the Legion's titles and roles of honor, and commanded those who swore allegiance to him to repaint their armor black. This was not only a reminder of their failure, but also as a mark of their newly pledged vows of vengeance against all who had wronged them. Abaddon's growing warbands became known as the Black Legion, and under their new war master, they fought hard to regain their lost sense of twisted honor. As long as a warrior is willing to bow before Abaddon the Despoiler and take the oath of obedience, he may join the Black Legion. During the millennia of warfare and countless acts of vengeance committed since the Horus Heresy, Space Marines from dozens of chapters and several other traitor legions have joined the Despoiler. Now, the Black Legion boasts warlords and warbands from almost every permutation of depraved doctrine, strategic specialization, and ruinous chaos faith. Usually, these warbands work in isolation, raiding planets and pillaging the Imperium in the name of their master, but largely pursuing their own agendas. In attempting to collate and categorize the Legion's deadly assaults, Imperial Secutors and Archivist Savants point to patterns of engaging foes swiftly in close quarters combat and cutting off any chance of retreat. They advance relentlessly towards the lines of their enemies, laying down hails of fire and bellowing dark oaths as they press forward. Wherever their foe presents weakness, the Black Legion are quick to exploit it, sending their elite warriors to eradicate a collapsing flank or slaughter enemy champions who have left themselves exposed. While some commanders extol the superiority of their legion's gene seed, the truth is that with the incorporation of warriors from other lineages and the corrupting influence of the warp, such notions are less important than loyalty to Abaddon. Indeed, many Black Legion warbands encourage and glorify mutations and actively seek out possession by demons. Warbands of the Black Legion are known to be incredibly diverse, capable of drawing upon an immense breadth of skills and specializations to counter every threat their enemies dare throw at them. Their large numbers draw on the experience of millennia-old veterans of the Long War, and others who have fought and survived amongst the madness and terror of warp storms. Amidst these untold thousands, each warrior, squad, or warband brings to the service of the Dark Gods a unique repertoire of honed abilities, so that most Black Legion warbands can accomplish what other traitors would require twice the numbers to achieve. Black Legion warbands, including traitors originally from the Iron Warriors, benefit from the Dour Siege Master's expertise in assaulting fortifications. Other Chaos Lords may call upon the arcane wisdom and diabolic witchcraft of sorcerers who were once of the Thousand Sons. Meanwhile, Zealots of the Word-Bearers, swayed to Abaddon's banner, often enter diabolical pacts into the warband's arsenal of esoteric assets, as well as throngs of frothing cultists. Recently turned renegades disclose strategic dispositions of Imperial armies to their new masters, along with access sigils and warp ciphers that allow Black Legion warbands to slip through supposedly secure cordons with horrifying ease. The Legion's warbands vary greatly in size, from a few score heretic Astartes to as many as several hundred. Each such force boasts its own transports, battle barges, grand cruisers, heavy landing craft, war machines, and demon engines, as well as throngs of fanatical cultists who charge screaming into the fray. A lone warband can reduce an enemy outpost to ruin, bombarding the defenses from on high as warriors on the ground close in for the kill. This gives the tyrannical Chaos Lords, who lead them, free rein to maraud as they please, sating their thirst for carnage and power without the need to form lasting alliances with their brethren. However, when Abaddon calls the warbands gather, their oaths to the Warmaster forcing them to fight as a legion united. Even so, there is no denying that the Black Legion remains an alliance of traitors. The warlords therein are constantly scheming against their rivals, stoking feuds, vying for prominence and glory, and undermining their contenders' achievements, even when not openly battling amongst themselves. Only their collective fear of the Despoiler and the chilling memory of the fates of those who have crossed him forces them to suffer cooperation. Before every doom, there is a portent. Before every apocalypse, a sign. Hearken, world claimer, is that dark omen given form. And the otherworldly destruction he heralds is the coming of the War Master himself. Harkin takes a heinous joy in his role as the mouthpiece of Abaddon, for it is he that proclaims the death of worlds. He does so not with some quotidian threat or hollow boast, but by driving a spear of terror and confusion deep into the heart of citizen and soldier alike. In such a fashion, he prepares the way for the coming of the Black Legion, as his airborne hosts descend on tongues of flame. Though the duty of many heralds is complete upon their lord's arrival, Harkin Worldclaimer revels in bringing destruction in person as well as from afar. He hastens to wherever the planet's denizens are coordinating their defenses, from winding supply lines to remote command bunkers, and there he strikes. Descending from the skies alongside vast flocks of jump pack warriors, Harkin plunges towards the nerve centers of the enemy's war efforts. With thunderous bellows, he proclaims to his foes that the hour of their doom has arrived, and that the slaughter shall not cease until the earth has been anointed with every last drop of their blood. This is no mindless bluster. While the enemy scrabbles to intercept Worldclaimer, drawing forces from the front lines to drive back his assaults, the Despoiler's armies on the ground move in to capitalize on the confusion, tearing into disorganized flanks and crumpling, reforming battle formations. Arkin's demon-touched relic, the Hellspear, has tasted the blood of monarchs, Xenos tyrants, and even Chaos Lords over his long service as herald to the Despoiler. And each demoralizing kill invigorates him, driving him to yet further acts of bloodshed. Yet it is not only the chests of warriors into which the Hellspear is plunged. It has become a symbolic act for Harkin, upon making planetfall, to drive the weapon deep into the world's crust and roar out the fell promise that within 80 days and 80 nights, the planet will fall. He has yet to be proven wrong. With the strength of the enormous Black Legion at his command, Abaddon intends to succeed where his predecessor Horus failed, to break the Imperial Palace wide open and tear the Emperor's corpse from the Golden Throne. Over the millennia, each of his conquests has gradually paved the way from the Eye of Terror towards the Sol System. Less obvious, however, is that along that path, his actions have gradually unpicked the veil between real space and the warp. During the course of his long years on the threshold of the Eye, Abaddon discovered a strange truth about the barrier between the Materium and the Immaterium. Dotted across the galaxy were ancient structures of black stone, stark and monolithic on the outside, but extremely complex within. There were many of these upon the fortress world of Cadia. Known as pylons to the planet's militarized populace, they were so old that none gave them more than a passing thought. It was Abaddon's belief that these structures were the very things that maintained the stability of the Cadian Gate. Something about them kept the energies of the warp from spilling through the Eye of Terror and cascading into real space. For thousands of years, the Despoiler sent his agents across the galaxy to locate these monoliths of black stone. He spent many years calling in old alliances, striking demonic bargains, and invoking ancient pacts with the traitor legions and their corrupted primarchs. Thread by tenuous thread, the Despoiler put together a plan to isolate and destroy these structures. Using false objectives or even entire black crusades to conceal his true motives. Over the course of several world-scouring invasions, Abaddon shattered or toppled these structures wherever he found them. Sometimes in person, other times using his agents, his apocalyptic ship, the Planet Killer, or the immense Blackstone fortresses he co-opted during the Gothic War. The last and greatest of these destructive campaigns was leveled at Cadia itself. Abaddon's 13th Black Crusade brought about so much death and destruction that his demonic allies were able to breach real space wherever they wished. Sustained indefinitely by the unbridled mayhem that raged around them. The demolition of the strange black monolith scattered across Cadia's surface was finally achieved, the capstone of a grand design that tied together the cataclysmic events on Pandorax, Fenris, the planet of the sorcerers, and a dozen worlds besides. Suddenly, the manifold armies of chaos were free to pour into real space like blood from a deep wound. True to his claims, Abaddon had succeeded in ripping open the gates of hell. As the galaxy has split along its length with warp storms, raging in 100 locations and more. Those traitor legions and renegade chapters who have sworn allegiance to the War Master have formed the vanguard of the invasion. They are a broad-headed spear that has plunged deep into the heart of the Cadian system and emerged from the other side. Abaddon cares little how many casualties are amassed as his great agenda comes to fruition. His only concern is to saturate Imperial territory with blood, summoning more demonic armies to his cause by doing so. This is a strategy Abaddon intends to see replicated on world after world as he extends the trail of destruction known as the Crimson Path. Each planetary invasion brings the Chaos Space Marines closer to Terra, with the nightmare armies of the Demon Lords following in their wake. With Cadia reduced to ruin, the Cicatrix Maledictum is being effectively weaponized by Abaddon's invasion. It spills out behind the 13th Black Crusade, roiling and growing more violent in the War Master's wake. Agitated by the scale of the Black Legion's many slaughters. Simultaneously, dozens of renegade warbands from the warp rift known as the Maelstrom are pouring in the Segmentum Solar, forcing the Space Marines to spread themselves thin as they fight on 100 fronts. Abaddon has driven a talon of unreality into the Segmentum Solar, its onset heralding the doom of the Imperium. The High Lords of Terra live in fear of real space collapsing entirely, and are sending every military force they can muster to halt Abaddon's rampage. As the drama plays out to its desperate conclusion, one thing remains certain: unending war. Word bearers. The sons of the demon Primarch Lorgar are zealous worshippers of the Dark Gods and fanatical warriors of diabolical conviction. They promulgate their insane proselytism as much at the barrel of a bolt gun or the razored edge of a chainsword as by their catechisms of hellish blasphemy, and more often seek unwilling sacrificial victims than fervent adherents. The word bearers are the most religious and dogmatic of the traitor legions, yet perversely also the most profane. Not only have they turned their faces from the Emperor, they also actively spread the worship of chaos. Word bearers' warriors stride into battle chanting sacrilegious hymnals, bedecked in crimson battle plate inscribed with unholy runes and forbidden texts. Demonic whispers fill the air as these disciples of Lorgar and the Dark Gods conduct ritual massacres timed to empower occult rites, their foes the doomed sacrificial offering. Even before their fall into utter damnation, the word bearers were known for their nigh fanatical conviction. Fragmentary inscriptions in the fortress of Hera allude to the legion's exultant admiration for the master of mankind, and how it deepened first into adoration and then into idolatry. Lorgar and his sons came to see their duty as embedding the Imperium's ideals into the worlds they won. No greater exemplar was there than the Emperor, and in the wake of their victories, the Legion raised monuments and temples to honor him as nothing less than a deity. In response, the Emperor chastised the Legion, censuring them publicly for their worship, their works destroyed, and the object of their devotion having spurned them. The word bearers turned to other, darker entities. They discovered gods in the depths of the warp that they saw as more worthy, and these beings craved worship. Steeped in the beliefs of Lorgar himself, the word bearers are the heralds of a terrible age of religious servitude. Worship of each of the Chaos Gods, along with many minor warp deities, is practiced within the Legion, as well as veneration of the Pantheon as a whole. Numerous pacts are made with demons, which the word bearers view as angelic servants of the gods, though servants nonetheless, and lower in standing than themselves. Legionaries see possession as an act of worship, and the use of demon weapons or sorcery as a sacred undertaking. From their demon-haunted world of Sicarus, the word bearers embark on pilgrimages of slaughter and enslavement throughout the galaxy. In the Imperium Nihilus, the hive cities of the planet Varrakis reeled in the wake of one such massacre. The word bearers' forced conversion of the planet's survivors was a precursor to their short existence as slave laborers in the erection of an immense shrine fortress to the Chaos Gods. Before the sons of Lorgar ritually sacrificed them to consecrate its completion, Legion commanders interpret the holy word of Lorgar, or the Chaos Gods, by myriad esoteric means. Via the entrails of enslaved prelates, astromantic patterns, the whispers of demons, or the casting of charred bones. They divine the most auspicious course, the lives that must be claimed, the ritual deeds that must be undertaken, and other unholy wisdom. Dark apostles decree how and where bloodshed is to be spilled. The warriors of the host then obey without question. Unwavering in their belief, they march to war beneath icons of the ruinous powers. Their weapons and war engines daubed in blood and blessed with cursed sigils. The word-bearers were the first amongst the heretic Astartes marked for the appearance of dark apostles. But their vile creeds have long since spread to many other brotherhoods of traitors. Dark apostles are the high priests of the Chaos Gods. They promulgate the blasphemous worship of those fell deities, as well as the veneration of their immortal demonic servants, preaching perversions of the martial spirituality espoused by chaplains of the Adeptus Astartes. Dark apostles spit hateful catechisms and call down the abhorrent blessings and curses of the Chaos Gods. Some lead entourages of dark disciples, corrupted mortals enthralled to their master's unholy oratory, who bear tainted idols and sacrilegious tomes at the high priest's side. Dark apostles can incite entire hive cities into open rebellion. Some are known to lead war bands of their own, squads of elite legionaries advancing menacingly behind hordes of fanatical cultists. Amongst no traitor legion do dark apostles hold as much influence as they do amongst the word bearers, however. Lorgar's chaos lords, demon princes, diabolists, and champions are guided as much by their blasphemous faith as by the vicissitudes of martial strategy, and dark apostles advise the greatest of the word bearers' commanders. Some dark apostles even rise to command a host of the Legion's Chaos Space Marines in their own right, leading them on dark crusades of heretical belief and bloodshed in the name of their gods. Night Lords. Cruel, sadistic, and endlessly inventive in their applications of torment and horror, the Night Lords have honed their terrifying tactics over 10 millennia. Their strikes are fueled by predilection for inflicting misery and pain far in advance, then sustaining it through repeated shock assaults and psychological torture, sapping the will of the most stoic foes. Most Night Lords do not appear to worship any one of the Chaos Gods to the degrees seen amongst other legions, but rather fight mostly for the pleasure and material gain. They look down on their more dogmatic brethren, be they fanatical Chaos Space Marines or zealous loyalists enthralled to the false emperor. In place of faith and devotion, they respect only strength, that and the use of terror as a weapon. No legion is as careful as them in severing enemy communications and making visible bloody examples of those who dare to oppose them. Some proscribed texts posit that these strategies were taught and refined by the Legion's master of such tactics, the Primarch Conrad Kurz. Other rumor-laden fragments hint at genetic and psychological degradation in the Legion, stemming from the use of unscrutinized recruits who embedded a gang-like culture of murderous and callous violence. Whatever the reason, incomplete tribunal records held under warded seals point to the fact that the Night Lord's brutality and excesses were known even before the Horus Heresy. Their victories in the name of the Great Crusade were often bought with mass civilian casualties, the butchering of prisoners of war, and countless acts crafted to engender a fear of retaliation against the Imperium. What was excused as ruthless efficiency, hardly worse than the brutal campaigns of other legions, escalated into atrocities that could not be forgiven. Before Kurz, or Night Haunter, as he was tremulously called on his homeworld, could be made to answer for his legion's crimes, the Horus Heresy erupted. Freed from any need for further pretense, Kurz and the Night Lords openly fought alongside the other traitor legions. The Legion was already fracturing when the heresy ended in failure. Their vision-haunted Primarch, an increasingly distant and insane figure, was supposedly slain by an Imperial assassin and vanished from Terra's ken. Never truly invested in overarching schemes of galactic domination, the Legion split into countless reaving warbands. These still serve the selfish and abhorrent whims of their dread overlords, who must ever keep a watchful eye on their murderous underlings, sating their lust for torturous piracy, lest they turn their flinzing blades upon their leaders. The atrocities Night Lord's warbands unleash tell a horrific sickness of their soul. Theirs is no holy crusade underpinned by a martial creed. Instead, they take an honorless delight in spreading murder and misery for its own sake. When a suitable prey site is identified, a warband will endeavor to isolate it before subjecting it to prolonged psychological torment. This may involve the abduction of merchants or pilgrims traveling to or from the system, the severance of continental power grids, or the murder of frontier sentinels and astropathic choirs. Those who dismiss the Night Lords as inconstant, unreliable, or cowardly have never suffered their undivided attention. With great patience, Night Lords will slowly crank up their prey sphere. Elite kill teams butcher noble officials in supposedly sealed chambers. Bloody graffiti spread by co-opted cultists appear overnight. Comm systems are hacked to broadcast endless screams and subsonic mutterings tailored by the warband sorcerers and dark apostles to hideous perfection. Step by step, an inexorable terror grips the foe. Rather than pin everything on a single overwhelming assault, Night Lords typically engage in countless aggressive patrols and surprise raids to disorient and frustrate. Darkness is their ally, and vicious hunts on a planet's night side, beneath artificially crafted shadow, or through the black corridors of a ship whose power has been cut, are all favored practices. When they do lunge into the open, these heretics are often seen wearing the wet skins of recent victims, their midnight-hued battle plate, strung with gory trophies and leering skeletal icons, underlit by the hollow shimmer of lightning forks. Repeated instances have shown that the Night Lords will give no quarter, and are entirely bereft of mercy. Any poor soul offering to surrender will have their pleas answered with mutilation and death. Night Lords make extensive use of swift jump pack equipped warriors, such as raptors. These cruel terror troops relish their sensation of godhood as they look down on prey they consider little better than insects. Addicted to the rush of aerial predation, they project amplified war cries like ghostly screams as they plummet towards their victims. Packs of word flame wreathed warp talons fight alongside them, suddenly appearing from the immaterium through rents carved by their own demonic talons. Many Night Lords commanders choose to strike from the skies, and are often attended by large war bands of aerial horrors. The most influential of these Dread Sky warriors marshal airborne demon engines to their cause, using Helldrakes to eliminate the enemy's anti-air capabilities. Night Lords revel in the terror caused by what their victims perceive as a dark flock of vengeful furies from myth, come to render their flesh and claim their souls. Iron Warriors. The Iron Warriors are amongst the galaxy's most formidable siege troops, callously laying waste to Imperial palaces and alien citadels with calculated cruelty. Their Primarch, Perturabo, was hailed by many as the unsurpassed master in the planning and execution of siege and trench warfare, and his traitorous sons embody this expertise to this day. The Iron Warriors see themselves as titans of old, who are loose in the universe, acting as they please, in the knowledge that no natural or man-made law can stop them. They honor the Chaos Gods as a pantheon, but few of them are truly devout worshippers. Their greatest loyalty is to their demon Primarch, Perturabo, whom they believed saved them from being sacrificed by the false Emperor. Millennia ago, the Iron Warriors came to believe that the Emperor saw them as fit only to undertake the most grueling and unsavory of duties. Years-long wars of attrition, compliance actions on nameless backwater worlds, or the inglorious garrisoning of fortresses that the Iron Warriors had built with every victory. Their meticulous efficiency and unfeeling pragmatism in the execution of their duty was not shared by other, more vainglorious legions. Worms of doubt worked their way past the Iron Warriors' famously cold demeanor as they witnessed the honors heaped upon others. With the stoicism of the Legion worn down, their armies bled on countless worlds. Missions they saw now as insults to their skill. The Iron Warriors fell to the promises of Horus and unleashed their pent-up rage against the Imperium. Their bitter and murderous wars have been waged against mankind for all the long millennia since. The Iron Warriors are the most heavily armed of the Traitor Legions. As siege specialists, they are skilled in unleashing withering salvos of devastating firepower. Whether manning one of their Baroque strongholds or assaulting the walls of loyalist fastness, their approach remains the same, with great importance being placed on detailed fire plans, targeting patterns, and bombardment coordination. They are adept at quickly erecting formidable battlefield fortifications, establishing strong points that will tie down the enemy and thereby allow the Iron Warriors' reserves to achieve superiority elsewhere. Their warriors are possessed of razor-sharp intellects and calculating minds, slivers of the dark genius of Perturabo, and their cold logic is employed in the crafting of masterful strategies that make a mockery of enemy defenses and sap the strength of attacking armies. These traitors are methodical and thorough, always seeking to grind down their opponents by attrition until the moment comes when they can be swept away in a concerted attack. Many of the Iron Warriors' enemies have made the fatal error of believing the Legion's warbands to be purely focused on long-range attacks, and therefore vulnerable to swift assaults. Nothing could be further from the truth. By nature, siege warfare is defined by long periods of intensive labor and interminable shelling, broken by the most brutal and merciless combat imaginable. In such moments, squads of Iron Warriors crash through breaches in enemy defenses created by artillery strikes, often in the wake of waves of cultists used as cannon fodder. Legionaries in hulking Terminator battle plate and squadrons of fast-moving heavy armor widen the breach till the defenses are shattered. At key points in the battle, the Iron Warriors adopt an icy ferocity that is terrifying to behold, crushing their enemies beneath repeated hammer blows of unrelenting aggression. It is claimed by some Iron Warriors that Perturabo masterminded the siege of the Emperor's Palace at the height of the Horus Heresy. Conversely, the Imperial Fists, the Emperor's Golden Praetorians, are held to have been pivotal in Terra's defense. Certain heretical historians have speculated on these two legions' specialities, surmising that a pride-driven rivalry was born of their competing aptitudes, whether via martial jealousy, personal betrayal, or seeds of mistrust sown by others. The Iron Warriors continue to harbor a deep-seated loathing for the Imperial Fists. The traitors gladly seize any opportunity to tear down the edifices of Dorne's sons, taking a sublime pleasure in proving their supremacy in the art of siegecraft. Wherever the Iron Warriors fight, they raise great citadels in their wake. Jagged towers, mounting heinous weapons of destruction, dominate the surrounding terrain, each a monument to the Legion's malice and ego. Their reputation as martial engineers and warp masons is well-founded. Iron Warriors' fortresses are embedded like barbs across real space and beyond, each surrounded by fields of living razor wire and demon-haunted trench networks. Amongst the greatest of these is the impossible fortress of Medrengard, built by the Iron Warriors upon a demon world they took for themselves within the Eye of Terror. Free from the shackles of physical law, Medrengard is a dizzying tangle of insane structures, from dungeons that pierce the planet to its core, up to spiraling pinnacles that rise for miles. The Iron Warriors have also spread their influence deep into the Imperium Nihilus, where the Albic Crucible, Zora Forge, and Fortress of Animus Eternal spew forth vast armies. Countless warbands of the Iron Warriors use Medrin Guard as their base of operations, plotting how to crush and imprison their enemies, the Imperial Fists foremost amongst them. The core of the Legion retains something of their former hierarchy, divided across huge grand companies that each draw upon countless batteries of artillery, swarms of clanking demon engines, and massed squadrons of corrupted battle tanks. They are commanded by champions using archaic titles such as Warsmith and Cannonmaster, who often bear demonically infused bionic augmentations redolent of the twisted mechanical appendages of obliterators. Numerous more autonomous warbands reave solely for their own selfish desires. Pact sworn with the heretics of the Dark Mechanicum, the traitor Titan Legions, and dread households of Chaos Knights ensure that many of the Iron Warriors' campaigns are accompanied by titanic monstrosities of iron and unholy power. Alpha Legion. Via labyrinthian schemes do the Alpha Legion devise their cunning victories. Their strategies are often charades, wrapped in secrecy inside a maze formed on countless deceptions and false leads. Their influence is the most insidious and extensive of the traitor legions. Their widespread assets operating in secret upon hundreds of worlds, awaiting the directive to strike. The Alpha Legion are devious beyond measure. Where other legions seek to dominate through raw strength, divine favor, or inspirational charisma, the Alpha Legion impose their will through intelligence and diversion. The tools of war they value most highly are misdirection, confusion, treachery, and duplicity. But when the time comes for them to spring their traps, they are such a focused and well-coordinated force, they can set a world ablaze in a single hour of blitzing assault. The Legion's diverse warbands and cells see themselves as far superior to almost any other force, combining outright power, subtlety, skill, and knowledge to outmaneuver and crush any foe. This ego-driven self-confidence drives within them a belief that those they consider inferior would understand the Alpha Legion's superiority if only they had the wit. Precious few records remain concerning the Alpha Legion before the heresy, and those that survive are contradictory, riddled with falsehoods, redactions, and references to non-existent sources. The current consensus amongst rigorously monitored scriveners is that when Horus made his pact with the Chaos Gods, the martial pride of the Alpha Legion was their downfall. What few consistent records have been unearthed, or intentionally released, depict their forces ever at the Great Crusade's periphery. Their victories were not on pivotal battlegrounds, nor won with feats of personal grandeur, often passing uncelebrated amongst the triumphs of other legions. Some unidentifiable historians have left works suggesting that a need for martial approbation began to consume the Legion and their inevitable genesire, Alpharius. The Primarch's reputation for orchestrating incredibly successful campaigns was tarnished in the eyes of more hidebound legions by the use of a mounting raft of unconventional tactics. Only Horus, it seemed, appreciated the legion's unusual capabilities. When treachery unveiled its face during the horrors of the Istvan V drop site massacre, the Alpha Legion fought alongside the heretics. Since the heresy, the Alpha Legion have continued to fight a covert war against the Imperium. They have never been known to hold a single homeworld, and operate instead from a slew of secret bases throughout the galaxy, even from within the heart of the Imperium. Raiding parties sally out from hidden fortresses or swift warships masquerading as lumbering merchantmen, sabotaging bases, attacking trade routes, and destroying small outposts with merciless efficiency. Their spy networks and double agents are without number. The Alpha Legion's connections with humans on the settled worlds of the Imperium are unparalleled. Tactically, the Alpha Legion believe in striking from several directions at once, employing numerous, even contradictory strategies. Guerrilla warfare, assassination, subordination, multiple redundancy forces, even treating with Xenos, and employing large numbers of non-Astartes assets. These and more are counted amongst the Alpha Legion's dishonorable methods by both their Imperial foes and their sometimes allies who barely trust them more. Alpha Legion warbands attach great importance to their subordinate field commanders, who are expected to use their initiative to outwit the enemy in a variety of shifting roles, and magnify the advantages that the heretic Astartes have over more conventional troops. They welcome opportunities to demonstrate their skills against loyalist space marines, and have been known to hold back some of their forces to test themselves more thoroughly in such circumstances. Emulating tales of their shadowy Primarch, Alpha Legion champions will often disguise themselves as lesser warriors to confound assassins, or disappear mid-battle to assess their warband's reaction to a sudden loss of command. When not deliberately obfuscating their identity, Alpha Legion warriors adopt the symbol of the Hydra as their legion's icon. This many-headed draconic creature of ancient myth serves to remind the Legion of their unity in body and spirit. On the battlefield, the terrifying coordination of the Legion's forces is their hallmark, their multi-pronged attacks applying relentless pressure while they search for weak points in the enemy's defenses. This unity, however, be seemingly abandoned at a moment's notice. Should the foe somehow gain the upper hand, Alpharius's scions rapidly disperse. Splitting into shadow cells, they melt away in dozens of directions at once. Like splinters in a wound, lone operatives or independent squads will continue to wreak havoc. And if the enemy expends months and lives to root them out, then the Alpha Legion's reinforcements will make their move unseen. Emperor's Children. No idle boast is the claim of perfection made by the obsessive and ostentatious Emperor's Children. Their warbands are expert in sublime artistic bladework, lightning-fast maneuvers, and the pinpoint application of overwhelming firepower. The Legion's preening champions ever strive to outdo each other in displays of extravagant martial precision. Once a legion dedicated to perfection in all their pursuits, the Emperor's children succumbed to the call of forbidden knowledge, and their drive for sublimity was perverted into an obsession with excess. During and after the Horus Heresy, the Emperor's children fell so far in seeking extreme sensation and vile experience that many underwent arcane surgical enhancements to enliven their perceptions. Many also took to imbibing dangerous cocktails of ever more extreme stimulants that sharpened their already augmented senses, but dulled all other. As one of the traitor legions, the Emperor's children invaded Terra at the climax of the heresy, but there are scant records of them fighting around the Imperial Palace. Dark legends instead suggest they descended upon the civilian population of the Administratum, the complex infrastructure of clerks, bureaucrats, curators, and menials, who coordinated the efforts of the far-flung Imperium. Whole families of staid scribes and haughty prefects fleeing the battle zone were hunted down and incarcerated in dreadful conditions. The Legion's simple pleasures had given way to complex debaucheries, fueling as many senses as possible. While their allies fought and died, the Emperor's children slaughtered millions of people and rendered them down to create endless varieties of drugs and stimulants. Countless thousands more died to give the Emperor's children more direct, if cruder, enjoyment. The perversion of the Legion's once noble ideals, though thought to have originated with Horus, was ultimately spread by their Primarch, Fulgrim. In the heresy's aftermath, the practice he had initiated of granting greater autonomy to charismatic commanders and their coteries of favored warriors laid the groundwork for the Legion's swift fracturing into individual warbands. Each came to follow their own path, preying on worlds throughout the galaxy as they sought abhorrent experiences and endless slaves to stir their abused sensoria. They turned upon other warbands of heretic Astartes, more often than most traitors, testing their skills against the greatest of foes before harvesting their rivals' slaves and servants for themselves. Because the senses of the Emperor's children have become so distorted, only the most extravagant patterns and colors register in their minds. Each suit of armor, every bolter and chainsword, is worked with fantastic ornamentation in praise of Slaanesh, their patron deity. All Emperor's children traitor marines alter and augment their armor in ways that can be subtly disturbing or garishly ostentatious, from clashing colors and shimmering silks to golden chains, leering faces, and terrific trophies. The Legion's weaponsmiths will carve scenes of debauchery into the pauldrons and breastplates of the most favored warriors, gratifying each wearer's warped sense of quality and beauty. Yet despite these obsessions, the Emperor's children are vicious and savage warriors in battle, delighting in both the destruction they cause and the injuries they sustain. They will serve any master in return for fresh slaves upon which to practice their devotion to Slaanesh. Worship of Slaanesh is embedded throughout the Legion's numerous scattered warbands. The mark of Slaanesh is prevalent, visible as bony extrusions in the shape of the god's sigil. Fleshy androgynous protrusions or halos of sickly psychic energy. Many of the Emperor's children have degenerated into noise marines in service to the Dark Prince, becoming obsessed with apocalyptic reverberations that can rend flesh and steel apart. Sonic forces they believe themselves uniquely blessed to appreciate. Others have followed different routes to ever more daring sensation, defiling holy idols before the eyes of their adherents, tearing down ancient fortifications mythologized as invulnerable, flaying alive lauded heroes and heroines in front of their own troops. In all these pursuits, the Emperor's children take a sick pleasure and seeing hope crushed and pride gutted. Of Fulgrim himself, the cabals of the Ordo Malleus know little with any surety. Rumors of his assassination by Imperial agents, his fall during the countless wars with rival legions, or his ascension to demonhood have as much credence as any. It is likely that most of the Legion's warbands do not know what became of their charismatic genesire, for tales abound of Emperor's children legionaries still seeking the fabled demon world where Fulgrim is said to hold court, that they might indulge in an eternity of excess in his service. After 10 millennia, the Inquisition still maintains a sizable strike force devoted to pursuing rumors, however slight, of the traitor Primarch's existence. Even before the Horus Heresy, Lucius was a consummate swordsman with a taste for outlandish self-mutilation. The few scars he received from his numerous duels he linked together by carving deep wounds into his face, chest, and arms. It became a maze of livid scar tissue that distorted and disfigured his body. By the time of the Galactic Rebellion, Lucius had come to equate pain and disfigurement with success in battle, gloating with a perverse sense of pride over his hideous appearance and sneeringly inviting any to best him. Compelled by whispers only he could hear, Lucius descended into madness. He committed ever more extreme acts, furthering an intense obsession with being the perfect swordsman. Yet finally, he met his match. During one of the many gladiatorial contests held by Fulgrim in the intervals between atrocities, and was slain by one of the Primarch's favored Lord Commanders, Sirius. Some dark power, many think Slaanesh itself, was loath to let such a promising protege slip into oblivion. Over the next few weeks, the artificer armor Commander Sirius wore began to warp and change. His hair fell out in clumps, and dark lines appeared under his flesh, slowly pushing through his skin as a maze of scar tissue. Soon, Lucius had emerged completely. All that remained of his executioner was a screaming, contorted face, subsumed for eternity into Lucius's armor. Lucius now stalks the galaxy as an arrogant slaughterer who can never truly be killed. Whoever slays him and takes even a moment of satisfaction from the act will find themselves transforming, slowly and painfully, into Lucius. The tortured visages of those who once killed him writhe across his armor, affording the swordsman endless gratification. His ornate saber and sentient whip have tasted the blood of champions and kings across the galaxy. leaving a trail of trademark decapitations behind him. Each victim, one whose skill was insufficient to divert Lucius's attention for more than a moment. He leeched his debauched war host with total confidence, welcoming death with as much passion as when he inflicts it upon his foes.